And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena, and happy hump day.
Happy hump day. What a busy news cycle trying to keep up with the repercussions of the medical walkout. Let's get started. That's where we're going to get started today. Our first keyword of the day.
Medical walkout.
So the collective resignation of resident doctors opposing the increase in medical school admissions is in full swing. More than half of all residents have submitted their resignations, many of whom have left their hospitals. For the record, those resignations weren't actually accepted, but that's a technicality because they did, in fact, walk out. How long can these university hospitals hold out? What's the latest?
Yeah, so usually when it comes to resignations or quitting a job, it's usually called a two-week notice, isn't it? I mean, but there are no 2 weeks were kind of given here. It was just literally sticking to procedure and then literally walking off the next day or on the same day that. Now, as of Monday, about 6,400 residents at 100 hospitals submitted their resignations, with about 1,600 of them walking off the job. There are around 13,000 trainee doctors in Korea, so... as you mentioned, that's about half of the residents across the country walking off. Now, the departure of residents has led to noticeable disruptions in medical services, especially at major university hospitals, where 30% to 50% of surgeries have been cancelled. Delays in medical treatments were particularly significant in popular departments with a high number of residents, of course. Now, a government probe shows that about one in four residents who submitted resignation letters had actually left the hospital. Now, a significant number of departures occurred at Severance Hospital and St. Mary's Hospital, the two of the big five hospitals here in Korea, of course, situated in Seoul. Now, the government has issued immediate orders to resume work for 831 residents who have left. It warned that failure to comply could lead to administrative procedures for suspension of their medical licenses. However, the health ministry emphasized that no penalties would be imposed if the residents and interns return to their duties within a day or two. Whether they'll adhere to that request remains to be seen. It looks unlikely. President Yoon also chimed in. He also urged them to return to work as well. He said interns and residents are the main forces in the medical field and the future leaders of healthcare, and he said they should not engage in collective action that jeopardizes the lives and health of the public, and they should, and that they shouldn't put the patients' lives at hostage.
Right, right. As already up to 50% of medical surgeries have been canceled, as you've said, at major university hospitals. Major hospitals have replied that they can hold out for a maximum of 2 to 3 weeks, but maybe that's moot. President Yoon and the presidential office is pressuring these intern doctors to return to line of duty. Now, I just want to put it out there. Be wary of how polarized these conversations are and try to look through both sides of the stance because it's a tense tug of war. All right, let's move on to our second keyword of the day.
Trip cancelled.
So President Yoon has held phone talks with his German and Danish counterparts to seek their understanding for his decision to postpone his trips there. Of course, I do think the general elections had to be prioritized and dealing with people's livelihoods. What did President Yoon have to say?
Right. So Yoon was planning to visit Germany and Denmark this week, but postponed the trip 4 days, actually, before his scheduled departure. So it was a bit of a surprise announcement and quite rare for such a cancellation to happen. Now, President Yoon explained the reasons for the delay, including a need to focus on domestic livelihood issues, although there is some speculation that he's staying in the country amid the kind of scandal surrounding his wife and First Lady Kim Gun-hee over these whole allegations of stock rigging and this whole designer luxury brand bag. And during the call with the German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier, the pair appreciated the continuation of the so-called Korea-Germany Joint Cybersecurity Advisory and agreed to proceed with planned cooperation projects, especially focusing on security, advanced technology, and cyber areas. They also agreed to further develop the friendly cooperative relationship between the two countries and stay in close communication. In the conversation with the Danish Prime Minister, Mette Frederiksen, they reaffirmed the close cooperation between the two countries as comprehensive green strategic partners. They reaffirmed their commitment to a comprehensive green strategic partnership between the two countries and agreed to push for cooperative projects in green growth and cutting-edge technologies. So they did have some working level talks and some prior talks about the agenda items of the what their meeting would have entailed if Yoon was to go there. So they're making good on those promises, but just not in person.
The European leaders said they understand the circumstances and express hopes to reschedule his visit at an appropriate time. So we'll wait and see if that's realized in the near future. Let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Police patrols.
So the National Police Agency has launched new mobile patrol units and detective units across the country specializing in the prevention of randomly targeted and violent crimes. There were a random series of killings sprinkled throughout last year that sent not just shockwaves throughout Korea, but frankly, across the world, because we were known to be a safer country. Tell us the details.
Yeah, certainly did shake the public when those back-to-back kind of stabbings and attacks happened. And these units are designed to tackle serious crimes like that and crimes with kind of unusual motives more effectively, because the motives behind those attacks were somewhat mysterious in nature, as you say, pretty random. Now, launch events took place in regional police headquarters, including a ceremony in Seoul attended by the National Police Chief Yoon Hee-geun. He expressed hope that the new mobile patrol units and detective units would act as a solid safety net for the public, effectively filling any gaps in public safety and security. Now, the mobile patrol units, or MPUs, are tasked with patrolling areas that are vulnerable to crime and crowded places, focusing on preventing crimes and maintaining order. The units consist of about 2,600 members organized into 28 teams spread across the nation, with significant numbers in Seoul, Gyeonggi Province, Busan, Incheon, and South Gyeongsang Province, so heavily populated areas. The mobile detective divisions, on the other hand, or MDDs, involve detectives patrolling areas to gather intelligence on crimes, conduct proactive investigations, and address serious crimes such as organized violence, drug offenses, and financial crimes. This division includes about 1,300 members distributed across 43 zones nationwide. This initiative was introduced in response to criticisms of the existing police system, which was seen as kind of inflexible and segmented into different functions, such as community policing, investigations, and traffic management. The need for a more responsive and unified approach became particularly evident, especially following those back-to-back stabbing rampages, namely in Seoul's Sillim area and Gyeonggi Province's Bundang last summer. Now, to address this, the police underwent a reorganization to create these mobile units, reducing the number of officers in administrative roles to allow for a more agile and responsive force. So technically kind of giving the police a little bit more power when it comes to enforcing the law. Now, the community policing force, which operates at the local level through police substations, or patrusso as they're known here in Korea, remains unchanged. So there's still going to be the community beat going about. Now, the police plan to use advanced data analysis and crime prediction tools to deploy these mobile units where they are most needed, aiming for a proactive and efficient response to crime.
All right, let's move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
Compensation received.
So the bereaved family of a Korean man forced to work for a Japanese company during Japan's occupation has received money from the firm he worked for. This marks the first time a forced labor victim has secured such funds in a legal case. What's the latest, Adam?
Right, so it is an unprecedented case. The company involved, Hitachi Josen, had previously deposited 60 million won with the Seoul Central District Court as a form of collateral, which the victim's family has now withdrawn as compensation. So technically, it's not a direct payment, but a payment through the legal system nonetheless. Now, before he died, the victim, only identified by his surname E, filed a suit against Hitachi Zosen in November 2014, demanding 120 million won in compensation for his forced labor. The Seoul High Court in January ordered the firm to pay 50 million won in damages plus 10 million won in delayed interest. The firm appealed a lower court ruling partially in favor of Ease, saying the period for compensation had expired, but the Supreme Court upheld the lower court's decision last December. Now, as Ease died before the Supreme Court's decision, the case was continued by his family. Now, however, as the firm has not yet complied, the plaintiffs filed a request to seize funds deposited by Hitachi Josen with the Seoul Central District Court. Now, the firm and the Japanese government said it was extremely regrettable that the court released the money to the family. So, yes, it's pretty consistent that the Japanese company and the government are not very content with the fact that money is being paid to these forced labor victims and that they had to resort to a kind of a seizure of funds that was paid as collateral. And this brings about, of course, the whole question of this foundation that has been set up by the government and whether more cases similar to this might happen. It seems a bit unlikely. This is kind of one in many cases and lawsuits that are being filed at the moment. And we'll have to see how the others play out and whether this does create any precedent for the other cases that are going on in court.
But one thing's absolutely certain, it's not compensation that is apologetic in nature. Isn't that what the victims are demanding at the end of the day?
Right. So it's more of than just a money thing. It's right. Kind of, you know, an official apology from the Japanese government is what the victims are wanting. But yeah, the Japanese government is not really willing to do that. And so that's why this tug of war is continuing.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Certainly not the last of it. Our final keyword of the day.
Campaign pledges.
So with less than 2 months until the general elections, rival parties have each announced new election pledges. Run us through what they were.
Right. So the People Power Party said that when it comes to preventing vicious crimes, it's pushing for life imprisonment without parole. It would also work to restrict a sentence reduction for crimes targeting the socially vulnerable, such as stalking and domestic violence. A significant part of their plan includes proposing changes to the Criminal Act to introduce a new crime of what they're calling public threat. This basically means strengthening punishments for crimes that happen randomly, like we mentioned, and for crimes that take place in public as well. Now, furthermore, the PPP plans to establish a Korean version of Jessica's Law. This law would require high-risk sex offenders who repeatedly commit crimes to live in facilities managed by the government and undergo mandatory chemical treatments as well. To better protect victims, they aim to guarantee the right of victims to give statements in court and enhance their access to trial records. The party also pledges to quickly replace old CCTV cameras that have been in place for over 10 years with high-definition ones. This comes amid criticism that some of the CCTV cameras on the streets are a bit too poor in quality to actually be of any use. Now, to enhance the fight against cybercrime, the ruling party plans to increase the number of specialists in cybercrime investigations by 1,000 and set up a dedicated agency for managing these specialists more effectively.
All right, so strengthening monitoring of serious crimes and furthermore. Now, the main opposition party vowed to introduce a system which the government covers unpaid child-rearing expenses. So what are the pledges made by the DP specifically?
Right, so it's basically a system they're pushing for where a parent who doesn't pay child support, the government will actually pay it first and then get the money back from the parent who owes it. Now, this plan was announced by the floor leader, Hong Ik-pyo, and he explained that not paying child support is a serious problem that can harm children's right to live, similar to child abuse. Now, the DP wants to set up a special committee to decide how much money the government should pay and also plans to make the Child Support Agency, which is currently part of the Gender Equality Ministry, its own separate organization. This would give the agency more power to check how much money and property the parent who owes child support has without needing their permission. They also want to stop people from avoiding the law by falsely reporting where they live. A lot of parents do that in order to kind of skirt these obligations. And to do this, they will check more carefully if someone has moved just to avoid paying child support. So those are the pledges by the rival parties. Of course, it is in the run-up to the elections, whether they'll be Whether they'll come into fruition remains another question, but they have it.
All right. That's just the beginning of it. 50 days might sound like right around the corner, but it's not. 50 days, a lot can unfold. I mean, parties are formed and then subsequently scrapped.
Right. So it is kind of a peak time at the moment where every day new pledges will probably be even made. Mm. A lot of mudslinging as well is going to be made as well. So we'll have to see. And a lot's going to be happening until the run up to the election.
If that wasn't enough, we also want to talk about the Indonesian presidential election coming up on the World Deconstructed this morning. 70 elections throughout the world this year, apparently. Wow. We won't cover all, but many. We'll cover many. Thanks, Adam. I'll speak to you again tomorrow.
You're very welcome. See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.